Thank you very much, Baroness. Peter?
Okay. Well, thank you. I'd like to also express my thanks to the United States Institute for Peace for hosting this gathering. I've worked for over 25 years in Middle Eastern countries and have always had a very high regard for my colleagues and partners in the Department of State and in American embassies. There have been some outstanding people I've met, great public servants with a humanity and an empathy with, of the people that they've worked with. And it's great to be here, not far from the Department of State, who have given us a great deal of support in the past. I'd like to say something about the study and also about the Amar International Charitable Foundation. The study was embarked upon about 3 or 4 years ago, well before Iraq moved up the international agenda. And it's very important to bear in mind the subtitle, the human and environmental study, because it has seemed to us that the two were interlinked. The organization Amar started over 10 years ago and is primarily a humanitarian relief organization. And it was started by Emma Nicholson in the early 90s after the uprising against Saddam Hussein after the liberation of Kuwait. And there was a ferocious response from the government, and there was an exodus of a lot of people from southern Iraq into Iran. And these people were largely nobody's friends, the Shiite Iraqis. Because they were Shiite, there was not a great deal of interest on the part of the rest of the Arab world. Because they were Arab, there was no great interest on the part of Iran. However, Iran did host a lot of these people. There was need for humanitarian relief, and Emma set up the organization, Amar International Charitable Foundation, to deliver relief, particularly primary health, water, sanitation, and education. And that has been the main work of Amar of the foundation over the last 10 years. In addition to the work of humanitarian relief, it has also been involved in information and bringing attention issues dealing with our humanitarian work. And during the 90s, we produced two reports. One was in 1994 about the ecological changes that were affecting southern Iraq, especially as a result of the drainage of marshes and dams. And a second report at the end of the century, 1999, 2000, 2001, which was then edited again and is the book that it was published 2 months ago in Britain. So we've been involved not only in the delivery of humanitarian relief, but also drawing attention to issues concerned with those people. And as Emma Nicholson pointed out, in some ways there's more information on southern Iraq brought together between these two covers than is available anywhere else. We searched the world for experts, and the contributors come from United States, the United Kingdom, France, Egypt, Russia. We were after the best people who could give a particular focus on some aspect of the people of southern Iraq, the geography, the demography, the economics, the history, and legal aspects, both water rights. And we were honored to have Professor Della Penna from Villanova to make one contribution on issues of water rights law. So it was a multidisciplinary and international effort. And it has been sort of sadly timely that the book has come out at a time when Iraq is high on the agenda. The people of the marshlands, as Emma pointed out, have suffered particularly over the last 10 or 20 years. James Brassington will visually show the degradation of the marshes and the effect that the drainage of the marshes has had on the people of the area. There's been a disproportionate suffering on the part of these people because they were based largely on a water-based economy, and all that has been destroyed. One has to get it in proportion. There have been changes to the area throughout the 20th century, and there were plans for draining the marshes going back to the early part of the 20th century. There were also changes in the last 30, 40 years within the marshes. The classic book on the marshlands is the book by Wilfred Thesiger, who was there in the 1950s. Gavin Young went there in the 50s and returned in the 1970s, and he records the changes that were happening between the 50s and the 70s. There was an out-migration, there was the introduction of schools and hospitals and factories to the area, and a greater government control. But the people of the area had always been seen as, to some extent, dissidents. They were the smugglers, the bandits, the outlaws. They were the area provided a haven for dissidents from Baghdad. And reading Iraqi history back 1,000 years, the marshes always had this element of being a refuge and ways of doing things in their own way. But it was only in the 90s, under the present regime in Iraq, that a drive was made to really sort this out and punish the people of the marshlands. And so it has been done in a pretty horrific way. There has been enormous consequences both to the environment and to the people as a result of the engineering works of the area. A destruction of an economic base, destruction of a way of life, out-migration, pauperization. And one has to bear in mind that in addition to this, the people of the marshlands have suffered from all the indignities and sufferings that the rest of the Iraqis have suffered. The human rights abuses, the repression, consequence of sanctions, and the constant threat of war. However, one of the interesting points about the book is that we're anxious to look at the future. The book, as Emma said, is not a political book. It's not a tract, but it is providing information for policymakers and decision makers, and it should be basic evidence for people looking at the future of Iraq, especially considering this very important part of southern Iraq. Looking to the future, I'd just like to make one or two points. I mentioned the charity deals mostly with Iraqis who are in Iran. The Iranian authorities are anticipating a flood of refugees in the event of war. In August, when I was there, there were vague plans for 150,000 extra refugees in the event of war. In the last two or three weeks, that figure has been revised upwards to 900,000 people. One has to try and visualize what may happen. It's as if all the people in Iraq may want to get out of the country. In Khuzestan, the area where most of the camps for people from southern Iraq, it's reckoned that there may be something like 400,000 extra refugees. That's twice the number of Iraqi refugees altogether in Iran at the moment. It's probable that those refugees would not stay a very long time. It's assumed if there's a regime change, they would wish to go back. So the humanitarian crisis will be acute and calamitous for two or three months, and that is when assistance will be required, financial assistance from all over the place. In our organization, we're already talking, we're planning, making contingency plans in the event of trouble like this. We're looking at what we can deliver immediately. We're working out proposals, costing, and especially in what we are good at doing, namely water, sanitation, and primary health care. But other issues of the future have to be considered, like the whole future of the marshlands area. How viable is it, how possible is it to rehabilitate the marshes? What is the future economy of the marshes likely to be? Now, one of the chapters in this book, which is extremely interesting, they're all interesting, I hasten to add, but one is of a particular interest is by the Russian economist Tkachenko. And he talks about the oil future of the whole country. And he points out that on Ministry of Oil, Iraqi Ministry of Oil figures, something like 80% of the potential oil wealth is in southern Iraq, in the area of the marshes. And he quotes the figure, and I've seen other figures which vary, but the figure he quotes is that there's something like 3.9 million barrels a day of oil potentially in that southern part of Iraq. Very little of this has been exploited so far. Most of the oil exploited in Iraq has been from the north. But when you think of that, and when you consider that Saudi Arabia produces something like 8 to 9 million barrels a day, this is colossal. In one area, something like half Saudi's oil exports. So one could see that there'd be a drive to totally transform the area. And it's important, it seems to me, that the interests and the welfare of the people of that area who have been deprived are also considered. It's important to consider, well, should some of the marshlands be rehabilitated? It's likely that there could be enormous changes, enormous benefits, and it's important that the marshlands people are looked after in this way. It's also important that the people of the marshlands are borne in mind in considering a future. Now, there are all sorts of big questions in the event of war or no war, but AMAR as an organisation has over 10 years of experience of dealing with the people here. We're poised to carry on activity of information and the provision of welfare. And we're keen also to work with other partners in similar areas. And I'm delighted again to be with at this institution with its superb record of conflict resolution and dealing with problems of this kind. I think it's of utmost importance that we can bring hope to an unhappy people, the afflicted marsh dwellers of southern Iraq. Thank you.